Blog Talk Radio.
Well, nothing seems to be working tonight. Hello. Technological difficulties, I guess. Yeah, nothing. It's really weird. Having some issues here. Anyway, I hope there's not an intro playing. It says it's playing, but it's not. And hopefully it's not playing and obstructing my voice. But welcome, everyone, to another evening of Paranormal Horizons with myself, Jason Ophir, and Maria Wilson Duff, my co-host. Maria, how's it going?
It's going great. It's I'm pretty excited about our guest this evening. It sounds like he's going to take up our full hour with lots of wonderful tales.
Ooh, very spooky stuff. Now, we're going to be talking to Jason McLeod. He's an author and has written some stuff. And you've actually read a couple of his books, right?
I have. I have read The Dark Siege. And, oh, there's
Wait.
The intro.
There's really wacky stuff. You know, whenever we talk about the paranormal, stuff happens. So I'm just going to play it through.
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
That sounded good, Jason.
The dashboard is like, it's like possessed. That's never happened before. So it's automatic. The intro should play automatically. And so it didn't play. So I waited a few seconds. I'm like, well, is it going to play? Is it going to play? Okay, it's not going to play. Then I'll manually hit the intro. So I hit it, and it's not doing anything until it decides to actually start like a minute later. So anyway, it's just really weird.
Well, this is kind of going along with the our theme for this evening, because like I was saying, I read The Dark Siege. And The Dark Siege 2, which is The Nightmare Returns. And this is stuff that movies are made of. I'm glad he wrote these books because he is an incredible writer. Everything, you never get bored. I mean, everything flows. Information is there. And it's just incredible what he witnessed with these families that had happened to them. So I'm ashamed to say I've not read his other books. So I hope he please forgives me. And also, he is a singer of a rock band, a metal band, and it's called Shadow Ministry. So he's a very talented gentleman, and I think we need to go ahead and bring him on because I'm tired of being sounding like a schoolgirl. Somebody's got a crush on a lead singer of a rock band.
All right, we'll bring him on. Hey, okay. Jason.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for those compliments.
Good.
That's very nice. Oh, man.
And for the record, I am a metalhead, so I'm all about the metal.
Have you checked out the band?
I have. I watched two videos online. I totally dig it.
Okay, cool. You know, they're live videos, so it's not the greatest quality, but it actually was surprisingly good quality considering, you know, filming a live event at a live venue. But it's just one of my very, very many interests, and it's another creative outlet where I get to do what I do before people. And I call myself a double agent. My name is Jason McLeod, and, you know, when I do these paranormal conventions and I do live shows with this prog metal band, progressive metal band that I co-founded called Shadow Ministry, I call myself a double agent because, you know, I don't get into the darkness and the evil and the devil horns symbols and the, you know, all of that negative stuff simply because of my experience being a very experienced paranormal investigator, and a metaphysician, and a light worker, and a starseed. And because what we focus our awareness on and our attention on is what we tend to manifest in our reality based on how powerful that intention is. And this ties right into this case that we're going to be talking about tonight that I wrote about that I was never going to talk about. The family wanted no recognition whatsoever because cases that have become quite famous, like the Smurls in Pennsylvania, for instance, is the first one that comes to mind. Their lives were ruined by people who passed by their house at all hours of the evening, their neighbors freaking out and ridiculing them, and, you know, the community. It was terrible for that family. So this family wanted none of that recognition. And the interesting thing is that they never even heard of the Warrens, even though this case took place right in the Warrens' hometown of Monroe, Connecticut. In fact, I used to live in Monroe when I was much younger. This intention that I'm talking about is something that ended up bringing this force that was properly expelled with the help of a bishop in Boston that we worked with right back into their lives because they thought about it and they dwelled upon it. What if it's going to come back and ruin our Christmas? What if, you know, poor Kelly's going to get affected again and so forth? So I kind of jumped ahead of the game, but basically my do you want me to just go into my history, or am I going to just wing it, or do you want to ask questions, or would you like to?
We can do all the above. Maybe I know Maria said a little bit about you. Maybe just go into a little bit of a bio, and we'll come up with some questions.
Sure.
And I'm really curious to get into some of these paranormal experiences and stuff. But, yeah, if you just want to just kind of let everybody know who you are.
Sure. Well, my name is Jason McLeod, and I'm from Connecticut. And I had always been interested as a little boy in spirit and understood that, you know, we were spiritual beings having a temporary physical experience. I was always looking out at the stars. I was always saying, why am I stuck here when there's so much out there? And I felt like I was just dropped off. But I had something very important to do. And I never understood what that was until later. But middle school, I was always in the library looking and reading about mythology and ghosts and religious studies and from all over the world and so forth. But it wasn't until I was 18 years old in Westport, Connecticut, and I pulled off the book The Demonologist by Gerard Griddle off the shelf from the Staples High School Library, which was about Ed and Lorraine Warren and their most terrifying cases that they had ever investigated up to that point in their careers, of course, which began way, way, way back in the 50s. And I read it, and I was actually stunned about the activity that was happening and things that would absolutely just blow people away or crack their personas or just cause them to be completely lost and broken in many ways. I couldn't believe that some of these people, especially children, were experiencing them, and I really had no interest in getting involved in it at that point. Connecticut's a very small state, and I knew that the Warrens were nearby, in fact, the town that I grew up in for part of my life, but I put it back on the shelf, and it wasn't until, this was 86, and it wasn't until 1990 that I was with my friend in his car, and we listened to the radio, and it was about the Warrens investigating a case that was involved in the Three Men and a Baby movie editing phase, where they saw the spirit of a boy holding a high-powered hunting rifle hiding behind the curtain in the editing phase, and, you know, they said, you know, there was no hunting rifle and there was no boy on set. And Lorraine determined, being a light trance medium, that this boy committed suicide on property a while back, and it turned out that he did. And I turned to Lou and I said, that'd be so cool to work with them. And he turned to me and said, yeah, no kidding. The very next day, he called me. Lou is a paramedic and a former Army combat medic and very well known in the Norwalk area. And he called me, I think it was the very next day, and he said, you're not going to believe who just called me. I asked who. He said, Ed Warren. I was like, what? Right? And he said, Ed was having heart issues. He called the chief EMS to have a medic recommend it for their team, and he gave Ed Lou's phone number. And Ed proceeded to call him and invite him to their Monday night class at their house in the museum portion of their house. I said, you have to get me in there. It's time. Now, it wasn't time back in 96 or 86, but we sat in the car. Literally, I turned to him and said, it'd be so cool to work with them. And yeah, no kidding was his response. And that right there is the universal law of intention. So intention is
That's very amazing.
Important. Things have happened that way throughout my whole life, right? So he got to go that Monday night. And, of course, I was just waiting for him to tell me all about it. And he told Lorraine about this very same synchronicity. And it wasn't chance. It was a synchronicity that was meant to take place. And I could tell you about story after story after story where things like that have happened. And people now especially are taking notice about synchronicities in their lives and realizing that it's the universe, the quantum field or consciousness, which is creator, fulfilling your intentions, if it's for your highest good. Obviously, it's only if it's for your highest good or if it's really important for it to take place. But he told Lorraine about the synchronicity, and she knows all about those. So she invited him to bring me the following Monday. And I went to the house and walked in. I met Andy, Drew Thompson. Everybody called him Andy for some reason, which you never like. But he's a friend of mine to this day. He was very psychic and was one of the Warren's top investigators at the time that I went in there. But I met Lorraine with this big beaming smile of hers, and you know how sweet she is if you know her. And she asked me, how strong is your faith, honey? Was the first question she asked me. And I said, well, I have immense faith. I believe that I and the Father are one, and that I'm fully protected. And she said, why do you want to get involved in work of this nature? And it was always of this nature. And I said, well, I've read The Demonologist, and I'm very, you know, surprised that these people had to endure such horrors. And I was concerned for especially the children who had to, you know, see these things happen and endure them. And she said, it's a calling then, she asked me. And I said, well, I think so. So she invited me in. And I got to, listen to it would be like a classroom setting where we're all sitting around in the museum where Ed and Lorraine are talking about the specific cases that are going on currently at that time. And there were a good 6-7 different cases going on that they decided that they would, you know, personally get in. It was always about getting involved in, you know, a little bit of ego there, but justifiably so. But so we got to learn about these cases, and to my astonishment, she assigned Lou and I to this case to investigate on their behalf without any experience whatsoever the very next evening. I was like, what?
Oh, my goodness.
You know? And, and it turned out to be incredible, the things that I couldn't believe. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that, but briefly – it'll have to be briefly because we only have an hour. But it was a husband and wife. They just moved in. They had a newborn baby, and every night they would see an apparition come through the wall in their bedroom, walk down the hallway, stop in front of the crib in the other room, and then disappear through the wall, scare the baby out of its wits, and then walk through the crib and disappear every night. So I set up a camcorder. This is, you know, one of those big old VHS camcorders on a tripod that my mom had, and aimed it at the wall where she was going to be coming out of, and then the husband and wife and Lou and I waited in the next room down the hallway I draw the blinds, lit some candles, and we waited in the room down the hall, and all of a sudden a bright blue flash of light went off, like lightning went off in the room. We all just stared at each other with our jaws hanging slack. We all saw it, like, wow. And I thought, wow, we're going to get the greatest footage ever in our first case. And we waited and waited to see this apparition come walking down the hallway. Well, we didn't see any apparition, but upon entering that room, we all smelled a very potent almonds, like an almondy perfume smell. And so we went back into the guest room again, well, the baby's crib area room, and exactly 30 minutes later, the flash happened again, which was about 50% as bright, and the smell was 50% reduced. And that was all we experienced. But we were all wanted to watch the tape and find out where that light came from. So we stuck the tape into the VHS machine, and we waited and waited and waited. And we hear my voice say, we just experienced the second flash of light. There was nothing at all but pitch, you know, dark gray on the camcorder screen because we just had a couple candles lit in the room for a little bit of illumination. So we were all bummed about that. But when I dropped the tape off to Lorraine and then waited till the next class and we all discussed it, well, she said that woman was – oh, I'm sorry. I missed the most important part. So we're watching the video, and we hear Lou go, "Did you hear that?" We're like, "What?" We didn't hear anything. He identified a specific heartbeat on the VHS tape, very faint. He's trained to listen for these things, but we would have completely missed it. He identified, even that's a diarrheatic heartbeat, right? And the next one was, that's an arthritic heartbeat. And the third one, he heard a different heartbeat. He was literally ghost white, no pun intended. But he was spooked out of his mind because he identified three different heartbeats. Now, there was never any body close enough to the camcorder, nor was the camcorder sensitive enough to pick up the heartbeats, but there they were. So when we went over the tape the following class, Lorraine said she was there. She wasn't going to give us any evidence that she was there on the tape, but the heartbeats were a specific message meant for Lou and Lou alone, because the three of us missed it. He was the only one that got it. And he was about 50% spooked out the door completely and ready to just give up and think this is just too much for him to deal with for some strange reason.
Wow.
He'd seen all kinds of amazing things and, you know, in all his training and his experience as a medic. But the bright blue flash of light, we all saw it. So how did we see it? Well, we all saw it through our pineal gland, which is photosensitive, has rods and cones. It's the tiny pea-sized or grain of rice-shaped gland in the center of the left and right hemispheres of the brain. And when that functions with the pituitary gland, they call it our gateway to the soul or our sixth sense or our third eye. Why do they call it the third eye? Because we're able to see. So the third eye is how you have full multicolor dream images when you're in a pitch-black room and your eyelids are closed. So that's the secret, is our pineal gland is what enables our sixth sense and our ability to see auras and to see spirits and to see things that are outside of the range of our five senses to decode. I've learned that all these years later, of course, on my own. But that's how we all saw it. And that's how some people see UFOs and others don't, or how some people see things and others don't and question the ones that claim to see things, or that you have mass sightings where everybody is experiencing these things. It's quite fascinating. But that was the first case I ever investigated with them for the Warrens. And I talk about this case, how I met the Warrens, like we just discussed at the beginning of the show, all the way through some of the most fascinating cases I've ever experienced, up at the end of the Dark Siege novels. It's called Dark Siege, A Connecticut Family's Nightmare. And what made it completely interesting, and I thought I would do something completely unique, is I included a detailed chapter-by-chapter analysis at the end, which is the final 100 pages, and that is explaining who I am as the author and my experiences working with the pioneers of the modern ghost investigation craze, the Warrens, of course, Ed, Lorraine Warren, my mentors and my friends. And because it's kind of rare that people get to work with them and experience the things that I've experienced, I thought it'd be fun for people to read about that. And then also about what the family did right and wrong every step of the way and why these things happen, explaining them through quantum physics and the law of attraction and intention, which are, like I said, is very important, and the law of conscious manifestation, and how it's all about frequency and vibration. Now, everything is frequency and vibration, and how love is the most powerful, highest frequency. Actually, compassion is heart-centered compassion, but love is one of the highest frequencies there is, and that is what dictates what you'll experience in your life, what kind of people you'll bring into your life through the law of attraction, and how to defeat these things. And it's the same thing that I preach in one of our songs. Well, I don't preach it. It's in the lyrics of one of our Shadow Ministry songs called Crucible, and how love defeats the darkness and love is the way. And that's the last thing you'll expect to hear in a metal band, but it's part of this story that I wrote that's a four-song story. And it's just a lot of fun, and it's they're great creative outlets for me. I love writing. I have a bachelor's in this creative writing, and that's what I went to college for. But my whole history about how I met the Warrens, how I wrote for the Sacred Heart University newspaper in a column called Hauntings, which let the students and the faculty and the community at large understand what was going on in the cases as they were unfolding. So that was a lot of fun. But then I transferred out to Washington State to get my bachelor's in this creative writing, and they got a phenomenal school out there. And I met two incredible psychic women who took me under their wing and really expanded my spirituality there. And then we flew the Warrens out at the school because I was writing, continuing my column there, and had the Warrens do their presentation. And we got to tour the whole Spokane area and go to the most haunted locations and, you know, and just do like an evening event. And then I started teaching classes out there based on what I learned with the Warrens and what I learned with my two psychic mentor friends and this amazing scientist. In fact, the Dark Siege case that we'll be getting into in detail is a case that happened in Monroe, Connecticut, after I graduated. And the third book in the series was meant to be Dark Siege, Rage and Wrathroom, which is a case that I was called on to investigate on the Warren's behalf because I was out in Washington. It was a case in nearby Rathdrum, Idaho, which was phenomenally incredible. Nothing as dark and demonic as the Dark Siege case was, but equally as interesting because there were Native American spirits and the family was involved in a cult and they wouldn't let them leave. And it was just, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. There was a vortex, there was a barrier preventing anybody from crossing over in that whole region. That my friend, the scientist, figured out, and it was fascinating stuff. So there's so many cases to write about, including several others that I investigated, you know, with the Warrens and so forth. And I just have to make sure that they're not, you know, the rights to those individual cases haven't been sold and so forth, or just tell it from my own perspective by changing things like names and locations and things like that, which is a common way for people to reveal what's going on in these situations without, you know, causing any problems for anybody. The most important thing is you don't want to cause any problems for anybody who's had absolutely devastating infestation, oppression, and or possession that's taken place on their property or anywhere nearby. I just handled a case up in upstate New York with, I called Bill Bean to get involved, and he and I went up to this case in upstate New York the November before this, last November. And that was a fascinating situation, too. But there's a lot of stuff that's ongoing, and I'm really, I really need to just crank out all these stories just so people can understand what has happened in sequence, because it's just such a fascinating, fascinating situation that I've experienced. And, you know, from right out of the gate, we had that experience with blue lights, and then I had my first overpoweringly incredible empathic experience. I wanted so badly to see an apparition. We were in a case up in Vermont. Well, this is, I don't know, where are we time-wise? Because we're probably already halfway through the show and I didn't get into the book yet.
No.
we got 45 minutes, but I wanted to ask you, you know, since you've been exposed to so many of these, you know, intense experiences, we've talked to a lot of people in the past that have had attachment problems with spirit attachments or physical health problems. Have you ever had issues with that, or things have followed you home, or, you know, you've gotten injured physically going on those investigations?
I've always felt protected, and I've always known I was protected, right? It's just a belief and a knowing that I'm protected. But I've never, you know, poked my finger at or challenged any of these extremely negative consciousnesses. There's no way to describe them. They're entities or beings or so forth, but I've always felt protected. I've never been physically assaulted or attacked or injured in any way in any of these cases. But just getting involved in a case can cause a feeling of like a fog in the head before it even takes place. Before I even get involved in a case or become aware of one, which is exactly what the Warrens warned. They said, once you open this door, you're always going to be a target. and they come after you when you're weakened, when you're sick, when you're depressed, if you have a breakup or something, or, you know, a death in the family, or there's an injury, or any of those types of things. It's all about the state of your energetic fields and your subtle fields. We have our auric field. We have aspects of those fields, which are our mental body, our causal body, our astral body, our spiritual body, emotional body. And they're all, picture all of those as defensive shields. And if you're depressed, then your emotional body is incredibly weak and can be penetrated. If you're, you know, questioning your faith, or you're just having a really rough time spiritually, then that can be reduced. You know, mentally, if you're just upset, that ties into the emotional as well. But you have to make sure you're protected. And there's so many ways to do that, but so little information out there to how to do it effectively. And when you're dealing with entities like the demonic force and so forth, these are fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh dimensional beings. And there's nothing that you could do as a third dimensional consciousness or expressing yourself. Our soul is infinite. Our soul is all powerful, all knowing, eternal. And when you're expressing in third dimension without any real connection, and understanding that you are much more than this third dimensional meat suit, you're really defenseless, regardless of how strong your faith is. You can use that as a weapon or a defense, but you're really in big trouble if you don't know how to protect yourself, and there's a lot of ways to do that. But to answer your question, I've never been physically attacked in any case while I was there, but I felt incredibly drained at times. But I have a whole slew of incredible, actually all women, and one man actually. My one friend in particular is a phenomenal metaphysician. I'm in Austin, Texas right now. That's where the band is, but I'm from Connecticut, and I spend, you know, half of the year up there. But I have people that I can call on and go see, and we just clear all this stuff out. And they actually help me clear homes and clear situations remotely so that we don't even need to set foot in the place, as far as helping human spirits cross over and getting rid of cords and attachments and implants and all kinds of amazing stuff that's so real that most people are oblivious to. But you can raise your vibrations using crystals, but it's mostly... or block negative energy using specific crystals. Sage is effective. I explain all this stuff in the Dark Siege chapter analysis section, that raising your vibration through saging or using sandalwood or holy incense, frankincense and myrrh, for instance. These are all very high frequency or high vibrational smokes and oils that you can diffuse into the air. That's why in the churches, they're walking down the aisle with the censers, which are, you know, shooting out the frankincense and myrrh smoke. There's a process called Sufu negation, which I performed personally in the case in Dark Siege while the exorcism was happening in the church, and also in the case in Rathdrum, Idaho, and that raises the frequency. So if you think how you know, when we drive by we smell, we get in range of a skunk smell, we're so repelled by that, we don't want to go anywhere near it, we can't wait till it passes and we get out of there. That's the same thing as fumigating or fumigation of a home or a place using high-frequency smoke, sandalwood, frankincense, myrrh, sage, it all works. It's making it uncomfortable for anything of a low vibration to stay within that zone or in that house, and it tends to cause them to leave because it's incompatible with them. It's very uncomfortable for them to stay. The same way we would, you know, like I said, we'd be repelled by a skunk or a really awful smell in a house. But there's so much to talk about.
I know.
I know how to clear it, and I have help to help me clear it. Should I become overcome as far as just feeling foggy-headed or just lethargic and just not able to focus? And that happens. And they mess with a lot of technology. They mess with a lot of radio shows where information could be broadcast that could, you know, expose them for what they are and teach people how to defeat them. But like I said earlier, I alluded to that love is the highest frequency there is. If you can raise the frequency or vibration of your living space and your sleeping space and your workspace with love frequency, radiating it from your heart, obviously, and knowing that this is God within you, You are really doing a great service to make your place off limits to these low vibrations and also, you know, keep them away and keep them out. So
what is your, Jason, what is your opinion of people that just think it's okay to go in and sage their own home when they're not experienced in anything?
You can see all you're doing is everything is intention. So if your intention is to go in and just raise the vibration of the home and clear out stagnating energy and to, you know, seal the place off, your intention is everything. We are so powerful. We are such powerful beings. We just don't even give ourselves any credit because we're just taught that we're less than, that we need a priest or we need somebody else to go and handle these situations. You have the authority, as Bill Bean would call you, the man of the house or the woman, a man as being the high priest of the house or the woman being the high priestess of the house, to take charge of that space and command, you know, in the name of creator or source or God or Yahweh or whatever name you want to use, that dark forces leave that space. This is a sacred space or God lives in this space. And we can absolutely clear our own spaces out. And but if it's a human spirit that's lurking around, as is often the case, which is what I get into in my third book about how and why this happens, then the staging isn't going to do anything, because these are people just like you or I who've left the physical body, who are now in their spirit body, who are completely and fully alive, living their life outside of a physical body, inside a spirit form. And they're just fine and think the space is theirs. And on another level, they're really sharing the same space with you. They're sharing the same living space, and they're living right alongside you. But the secret is, the most important information is that when we get into the subject of human spirits, is that the human body and the human faculties, the senses, the human faculties, the eyes, for instance, can only see less than 1% of 1% of the matter, space, and energy around us, which is the ultraviolet spectrum. And it's so pathetically small, the things that we can actually register with our own eyes. To say that things don't exist because we can't see them is completely ludicrous. So we're surrounded by a sea of frequencies that we are completely unable to perceive. And it's like going into a pitch black warehouse, massive pitch black warehouse with a little laser pointer. And you're shooting a laser pointer at a wall. Well, that little laser pointer is all you can see in that entire massive building. And so the reason we can't see people when they leave their bodies in the hospital rooms or in the operating tables or in accidents and so forth, is because our physical eyes are unable to see them because they're then vibrating outside of the range of our five senses to decode them. Some people who are genuinely psychic or who can see more through their third eye, their pineal gland, are able to register just slightly more of those frequencies than the average human being can. And there's also a reason for that, because our pineal gland is calcified, and it's calcified by fluoride. And that's why the powers that be have fluoridated the water supplies in most every major city and stuck it in toothpaste. And it's a byproduct of the aluminum industry. It's completely toxic, yet we're being flooded with the stuff because it turns our pineal gland to stone, literally, and literally closes off our highest perception. And it's a tragedy, but many cities are actually eliminating fluoride. And I think Europe is bandit and so forth, but there's ways to decalcify it, but you can go online and find all kinds of things like that. But skate liver oil, which is a fish oil, is a good way of decalcifying it. But
is that like an organized agenda? Like they've thought that
totally
out. They want people to have their pineal gland calcified.
And
wow, that's the
first
time I've heard.
And it keeps people docile. They started using it in the concentration camps in Germany. So Americans are all fluoridated beyond belief, and that's why the Yellow Vest movement is taking place in Europe, and Americans are just sitting there going, you know, I'm not going to get involved, but it's really true. And it's really fascinating. So, God, what else? I mean, there's so much to talk about, but what else do you want to go into?
I wanted to. Go ahead, Jason.
Go ahead. I just was going to say, you know, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and I know that our water is not fluoridated, but there was a push for it. So I don't know if that ever manifested or not, but that definitely adds a new thought to it. I had no idea. Sorry, Maria, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to say is that they put that in the water under the pretense of this is going to help your teeth. It'll make your teeth stronger and things like that, but it's a neurotoxin. It completely separates you from reality.
Well, it locks us in this 3D reality, this archontic matrix, and that's a whole other subject to get into too. Because here's another big thing, right? Because people ask, you know, are you religious or Catholic or whatever? I always considered myself connected to my creator, and you know. And as a little boy, and I don't know how to describe it very well at that age, but we are fields of awareness, aspects of the Creator cast off from the Creator, which is this quantum field, and it is life itself, and it is consciousness, and we are all aspects of that consciousness. We're all created by the Creator as an individual or an individuated aspect of it, or like a God spark, I call it, to go and experience creation, and to remember who we are, and to eventually return to source and decide whether we want to start all over again or continue to evolve. But where am I going with that?
It blocks our vibration.
Yeah. So the pre-Christian Gnostics used psychoactive potions to expand their awareness. Natural compounds, you know, like the same thing like with ayahuasca would be your peyote or things like that, but these compounds using herbs and tinctures and leaves and things to expand their awareness outside of their physical bodies. And what they perceived collectively, they recorded. And if you ever want to delve into something that'll blow you away, besides my Dark Siege books, is the Nag Hammadi scriptures. Nag Hammadi scriptures, which is the Dungeons and Dragons version, adult version of what the Holy Bible is in allegory form. It's so expansive to describe the creation and the luminaries and the beings and the powers and the principalities and their names and their station and who they are and what they are and what their purposes are and the creation of humankind and all this stuff. It'll blow you away. And it's for people who are really serious seekers of knowledge or gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. That's what they call them, the Gnostics, because they're seeking gnosis. But they describe this artificial construct that was overlaying the real earth. And it created this illusory world based on fear when the true earth is based on love. And that's why that's the place we all yearn. It's a place we all know we come from and the place we all yearn to return to, where everybody lives in peace and harmony and joy and abundance and kindness and compassion and full connection with the animals and the plants and with each other, no war, no disease, no any of this stuff, which is the way we remember the way it should be. And that's why we all want to go back there. We all believe that's what heaven will be like, but that's really what our existence is supposed to be like on this 3D earth. But this force, they call the Demiurge, D-E-M-I-U-R-G-E, or the Lord Archon, like this gigantic, it's also Yaldabaoth, if you ever heard of that name. And that's where the Cthulhu stuff came from Lovecraft. But it's this entity that has surrounded the earth and created this false illusion that we've all been sucked into, that's now almost completely dismantled, because we're on the cusp of this great expansion of awareness. But that stuff will blow you away. But that's this Matrix. And that's where the whole Matrix movie came from. If you read the Nag-Hammadi scriptures, it's the Matrix. And that's where this book, the movies have come from as a modern way to bring the story to people's awareness based on this current technological age that we're into. But it's so fascinating stuff. There's so many things to discover, to learn, that people should never be bored. There's so many things to look into. So all of these things that I've accumulated in my own awareness over the 50 years that I've been born now, I just turned 50, I've really just been one more piece of the puzzle or one thread in the grand golden mosaic that is my life and that is everybody's life. It's just been a heck of a ride. And I really enjoy reaching out to people when I do these big paranormal conventions. And then I'm starting to do my own presentations and lectures and so forth, specifically for the elderly, because, you know, they start to really, you know, worry about what to expect and everything, and there's absolutely nothing to worry about because this life, you know, is the trial and the tribulation, and it's such a release to leave the physical body. That's why I wrote the third book I have called Our Journey Home, The Handbook for the Transition, which just came out last Christmas, and it is beautiful when it's large print and it's loaded with beautiful illustrations, and it's meant for people who are in hospice and their caregivers to help them lose the fear of leaving their bodies. Because so many people have talked to me after they've read my books and they said the analysis section helped, you know, their loved ones lose their fear of letting go and leaving the body. And I said, it's so beautiful. And it'd be so much more effective to hand them that beautiful book than to say, here, read this absolutely horrific demonic infestation story just to get to the analysis section to lose your fear and understand how love conquers darkness, to be able, you know, because for people who don't want to expose themselves to that, because it is terrifying what happened to this family.
People have been ridiculed for so many years because of their faith, because they want to be spiritual and they understand this. And it seems like you're made fun of all the time because you say you believe in God, you believe in Jesus, and you believe in the Holy Spirit, and people will laugh at you. And it's this type of mentality in this day and age, and this has been going on for years, of course, but people are losing touch with the love and with their spirituality because they're afraid to explore it. They're being dumbed down by fear.
Well,
and we're also
is also part of the control matrix, and it's something that I, you know, never bought into when I was young. And, you know, the Warrens approached everything through Catholicism. My grandmother was born again Christian, so I had that at the Warrens. And I used all of that information, but when I met my two friends who were incredible psychics, they handled everything through spirituality. So spirituality is going within and learning about spirituality through your own experience, right? It's experiential versus, you know, studying the Quran or studying, you know, the Torah or studying the Bible or studying, you know, with anything else that's been presented to us as the truth in quotes, when they're all really part of this control grid to keep everybody separated and divided and at war with each other and to keep people under the mistaken perception that they're less than or that they're not powerful enough on their own right, that they need to give all their power away to some other entity that they present as somebody that people need to worship, for instance. Like so many of the stories, if you read the Nag-Hammadi scriptures, it's a completely different picture than what's portrayed in the Bible, for instance. And, of course, the Catholic Church branded them heretics and burned all their manuscripts, except the ones that they actually buried and that were uncovered. And it's a phenomenal read. But they describe this all-encompassing Lord Archon or Demiurge, which has basically tricked everybody and inverted. So much of what we believe to be true is a complete inversion of the truth. meaning it's completely opposite. It's turned up on, it's turned upside down, or it's turned on its head. And that's a whole other conversation too. But we are eternal, immortal, infinite fields of consciousness, temporarily animated physical bodies, and we're given names. This is another thing that I talked about in the beginning of my Our Journey Home book, is that you're not human, right? Your physical body is human, but your soul is comes from elsewhere. You're not Mary or John or Jason or any of these names. Those are just a name that has been given to you by your parents. Yet when you stop identifying as infinite awareness and then identify yourself as Mary the schoolgirl or John the janitor, you know, or Ralph the pilot, then that's just a certain aspect of your current life experience. It's not who you really are. So you're not any of those things. You're not your body. You're not your name. You're not your career. You're not your gender, because the soul is genderless. And I'm not getting into the whole gender confusion things that's going on right now. I'm not going to touch that.
No.
But it's the you know, it's the body. You're either one or the other, right? I'll go with the one of two. I don't believe in all these extra genders that they've created. That is, it's part of the confusion of the society. But the I'm sorry if that upsets anybody, but that's through my experience, that's what's going on. Is the soul is genderless. It's neutral. But the body has genitalia and hormones and all kinds of things. Sure, our energy field has both masculine and feminine, and the ranges vary depending on the entity and the experiences and the past lives and the parallel lives and the experience of that consciousness. But we're not any of those things. And the body is just an electrochemical, biological spacesuit to experience this third dimensional, this specific vibration. And when the body fails, the consciousness vacates the body, normally through the crown chakra, and realizes it is completely fine. It is unscathed. No matter what happens to the physical body, nothing can affect your eternal awareness. And you may be distraught over the sudden demise of the physical spacesuit, but you quickly get over it and you realize, hey, I'm still very much me. I can see, and I can see even though I don't have physical eyes. I can hear though I don't have physical ears. I can make sense of what's going on even though I don't have a physical brain to determine what it is that I'm seeing or hearing. So, it gets much deeper in what to do once that happens. This book I'm telling, like the Our Journey Home book, about what to expect and how you'll be unable to interact with physical objects anymore, even though quantum physics has proven that nothing is physical. Everything is vibration, electromagnetic state against electromagnetic state. And that's the key to this whole thing. So the key to the whole paranormal is that all of these things, these ghosts and apparitions and demons and devils and elementals and fairies and all, you know, witchcraft and voodoo and sorcery and all things that we can't register with our physical eyes, that can only see 1% of 1% of what's out there, are all vibrating outside of the range of our physical senses to decode. So you may create a gadget that could be a little more sensitive to maybe pick up flashes or voices, bits of communication or a flash image of a spirit or a heat sensor or something like that. But all you're doing is registering something that is beyond your normal range to discern, but they're very much real, and they're very much in their own vibration as alive as we are. And that's just the fourth dimension. Then you have the fifth through the 12th, and these things go, right? They continue to rise up in their vibratory rate further and further away from our ability to perceive. So if we're all shifting, if a human spirit leaves the physical body, it's no longer in third dimension, it's in fourth. And the fourth dimension is really the realm of thought. And there's a lot of negative entities that dwell within the fourth dimension, but they're outside of our range to see. So really, it's kind of a blessing that we don't see them in a way, because we're experiencing this illusion. I'm experiencing the illusion that I'm separate from you. I'm Jason, and I'm separate from the other Jason that's the co-host of this show, for instance, right? I'm separate from you. I live my life. You live your life. But the reality is that spiritually we're all one. in third dimension, we're not, because I have my own parents, you have your own parents who were provided a genetic makeup to create this physical form that I'm using so that I can interact here and experience whatever it is I want to experience. And when the ride is over and my body fails due to old age or an accident or a virus or something, my consciousness vacates and I go off. And there's several things you can do. You can stay earthbound, which is what we have when we have ghosts, or you go back to your former surroundings. Oh, so you're in a car accident on the highway, right? Your car gets destroyed, your body is mangled, your consciousness is flung out of your body, and you're like, wow, I want to be home. So within a flash, you're back home in your living room, or sitting at your desk, or sitting in your easy chair, you know, or on your bed if you were, you know, very old and that's where you wanted to spend most of your remaining days. But there you remain, vibrating outside of the range of those who are still embodied to see. And if they're sensitive enough, they'll get a glimpse out of the corner of their eye, or they'll smell your cigar, or they'll, you know, smell your perfume, or they'll just sense that you're there in your house. And it's still very much your house, but you're able to perceive them fully. In fourth dimension, you're able to perceive everything going on in third dimension because you're higher. You're outside.
That's not
third. You look down. You can't go
that's
from
not fair.
Third to fourth. See? Yeah, well, yeah, that's what it is. And that's why
that's not fair.
When a new family moves in and they start tearing walls down, right, and start doing building additions on the house or doing whatever it is that they don't want to happen, that's when activity can start to happen. And then you have somebody coming in thinking they can sage them out, but that's not going to happen because they're saying, this is my house, goddammit, you know, get out of my house. And until you have an open and honest communication with them and say, hey, you left your body. Do you remember when you left your body? I try to talk to them and say, do you remember when you left your body and how frightening that was or how scary that was? Well, the physical world of the third dimension is no longer, you know, available to you anymore. And you really should just go on and choose to return to Creator. I would say choose to go straight to the Creator. Don't go into the light, because that could be the great bug zapper, right, that zaps your consciousness, which is what the Gnostics figured out, right? That's the giant bug zapper where you forget everything and then you're shoveled right back into a body again. But you go, in fact, Janeway, they did a Star Trek Voyager episode about that very thing. Just happened, but soft disclosure there, sorry about that. But I choose to return home to my creator, take me home, type of it. And that's what I encourage everybody to do, because you really don't know if the apparition that appears before you is really your Uncle Bob, or is really, you know, Father McKenna, or any of these people that you would trust to follow. You know, or especially if you're told to follow, you have to come with me, you know, this way and go through this door and things like that. Just be very careful about who you're dealing with and always trust your intuition. So trusting your intuition is the most important thing to do while you're embodied and not embodied. Disembodied. So,
definitely.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So let's just extend the show for another 6 hours and maybe we can cover a lot of stuff. But,
so what about the skeptics out there? Do you ever run into skeptics and go that say, you know, spirits and demons don't exist. It's all in your head, and people just imagine these things.
Right.
It's not real. Do you run into a lot of that?
Not often, but if I do, they just have no experience in the matter. You can't. So, for instance, you have a near-death experience, right? Individuals leave their bodies, they're seeing colors they can't even describe when they come back into the body because they're experiencing colors that we aren't able to perceive. We can only perceive the electromagnetic spectrum here, right? The ultraviolet, the electromagnetic spectrum, which is all the colors in the rainbow, and that's it. So they come off, they describe colors, they see entities, they hear sounds and music, so things like that are just so incredible compared to what they experience here in this lower vibration, that you can't even explain it, right? So there's no way that anybody who hasn't experienced demonic activity, like I have, for instance, can have any frame of reference. They have no idea what they're talking about. And they just dismiss it outright. So I always go back to the human eyes can only see less than 1% of 1% of what's out there. So if they can't see it and they say it doesn't exist, then how ludicrous is that when they can only see less than 1% of what is possible to be seen, right? So it's really a debate you can't have because one individual has no experience and the other, you know, has their experience that they know to be true. So it's just a moot point, and you know it's hard to deal with. And you know, so many people question everything, but that's, you know, it's good to question everything, but it's, you know, there's no getting through to those types of people. So if you have somebody, if you've had experiences outside of the third dimension, for instance, you can't explain that to somebody who hasn't experienced it themselves. And it's just, you know, that's it. But
that is,
that's what this
that
whole
is
experience
hard.
Is about. We're here to experience. The soul seeks experience. We can know because we know everything when we're outside. When we return out of this body, we know everything. But until we experience what it's like to be a crippled in a wheelchair or a superstar athlete or a priest or a prostitute or a homeless man or a guy that lives in a mansion or, you know, any all the myriad of things that we can experience until you actually go and experience it and how it affects you and how others in your life are affected by it, you really don't know what it is. That's why they say don't pity anybody in a wheelchair, don't envy any superstar, you know, or don't be jealous of anybody else's success or feel sorry for them based on what they're experiencing in their life. Because everything manifests in people's lives based on what they choose to experience through their own thoughts and intentions. And it sounds wild, but it's really true. And we create everybody that comes into our lives, specifically as the creator or the quantum field's response to our request. It's so cool. And the things that have happened in my life and the synchronicities that have happened just to satisfy my need for validation in that way because it's happened that way for me. But, man, I think we're out of time almost, aren't we? If people want to get more information on my books, it's www.darksiege.com, DarkSiege.com. It's also McLeod Metaphysics, MCLEODMETAPHYSICS.com. And that's my newest book, which is a different website I made through Wix, which is actually pretty cool. They're also available on Amazon. I have phenomenal reviews on Amazon. I think I have like 180 reviews now on for Darkseid Volume 1, almost all 5 stars. And the ones that I don't have 5 stars on are people that say, well, this can't possibly be real. This couldn't have existed. But, you know, it's about the quality of the book and the writing of the book. It's not about whether you believe it or not. But the stuff that happened in this case is absolutely mind-blowing. And it's the most, I wrote about it because it's the most fascinating, frightening, and terrifying thing I've ever experienced. And the most rapid escalation of demonic infestation, oppression, and possession that any of us have ever experienced, meaning it happened so quickly. Both books, the Darkseid series, are required reading for Bishop James Long's demonology studies for his online class, which is a real blessing because he's a great guy. And I was on Coast to Coast twice about it. And so it's a fascinating read, and it's the most common comments where I could not put this book down, but I couldn't read it at night. And I have autographed copies here with me. If people want something that's signed or personalized, you can get it through me, through darkseed.com, or by sending me $25 via PayPal, which includes shipping, to darkseedbook, E-O-O-K, at gmail.com. And the same thing with the Our Journey Home. I have plenty of copies of those too. But it's a lot of fun. I have a new book coming out called Renegade of Light. That should be due out in the next month. And I have all the other cases I'm writing about in the Darkseid series, including a book about most terrifying Ouija board stories. And I'll get into how and why those work as well.
Yeah, there you go, Jason. That's something, Mr. Catman, that's something you enjoy is the Ouija board stories. Because that ought to scare the bejesus out of you.
Yeah.
I know I don't read or watch scary stuff at night. I have a too active imagination, so.
Yeah.
Well,
seriously,
you need to read both of his books. I just really recommend them. It's an experience that nobody ever wants to go through. This is all true stuff. This is our world. This is good versus evil. And this is something that you better pray that you never, ever have to experience. And I'm thankful that we have people like the Warrens and Jason and people that give everything that they have of themselves and their good vibrations and their faith and to help people that are absolutely going through the truest hell on earth that you could ever go through. And Jason, I just really appreciate your work.
I really appreciate you. Thank you very much. It's always
yeah,
that's my
you.
Purpose is to really, you know, to help people understand these things better and how to understand that love is the key, man. Just, you know, don't watch the scary stuff, the turn off the paranormal shows and the horror movies and the darkness and the low vibrational stuff. And just, you know, Ed always said laughter is one of the greatest weapons or defenses against these forces because laughter is high frequency. He's always cracking jokes and making everybody, you know, be jovial and lighthearted and everything. And that's very important. And, you know, I wrote Dark Siege. I wrote about this case specifically because of the number of paranormal groups that were jumping out of nowhere that I saw on Facebook and the number of people that were actually groups that were going in there doing all the wrong things, specifically using Ouija boards, people's houses. And that's like the ultimate irony as far as I'm concerned. It was like an epidemic when I first decided I need to reveal this case. And I talked to the family and I said, change our names. But if they can help one family or one individual from going through the absolute hell that they went through, then please do it, they said. And that's what I did. And, you know, I am waiting for the right film company and movie group or producer to really bring this out. But nothing, I mean, it's so awful and terrifying that nothing needs to be changed. And I think like a Netflix type of situation or like an Amazon Prime type of situation might be the way to go, like in a series, because there's enough information in that case that they can go at least, you know, 8 episodes or so. But something like that. But, I mean, the books are great. I definitely have a talent for writing, and it's a cinematic writing style that most people can't put down, and you feel like you're right there because I designed it and I wrote it like it was a Stephen King-esque horror fiction format. And from the very beginning, right, when the mother and daughter were driving past the cemetery, all the way until the end.
Yes, you did very well with that. You did.
Thanks.
And I'm like you, and I understand people don't understand what they're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Paranormal is not something that you need to play with. This isn't a game. It's not for scares. This is real. Evil's real.
Right.
And thankfully, a lot of people have not experienced that. But when they do, you know, there's very few people that can handle the situation. They all run screaming away, or they don't believe what's going on. But
right.
I do believe we are out of time. I thank you so
yes.
very much for taking time out tonight to speak with us. Jason, how well are you going to sleep tonight?
I don't know. It's up in the air, but I do want to thank you, Jason, for coming on, taking the time to share your knowledge and your experiences with us. And I know we just scratched the surface, so hopefully we can get you back on sometime in the future.
That sounds great. Thank you very much, both of you, and have a wonderful night. And remember, love is the key.
Love is the
thank
key
you.
And laughter. Thanks again, Jason.
Yes, love and laughter. Have a great night. Thank you, everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm wondering if, because we had technical difficulty, if that was the fourth dimension interfering with the show. That I hadn't seen that particular problem before, but, you know, it seems like every time we talk about this subject, something like that happens, and it kind of gets in my brain, and then I'm wondering, you know, if there's some sort of spiritual interference.
You know exactly what's going on. I mean, it's that gut feeling. It really is. It's exactly what he was talking about. Trust your instincts. And, yeah, so the paranormal does come through the radio waves. We all know this. And the more we deal with this, the more problems you're going to have, Jason. So just get ready for it, dear.
Well, you know, I'm going to watch some TV, and I'm going to make sure it's a comedy to get my mind off the low vibrations.
There you go. Fluffy has a new episode on Netflix, so I think that's what you need to watch tonight.
Okay, I'll check it out. Let's see. Yeah, I guess we're out of time. Do you have anything else?
I'm good. I don't think we have a guest for next week, but, you know, surprises do happen. So it may just be me, you, and Sherry just kind of hashing it out on the things that have been going on lately in the paranormal world.
Cool. That sounds fun. I always like that. And I'm sure we can find plenty of stuff to talk about. All right. Well, with that, I just want to thank everybody for their activity on the Paranormal Horizons Facebook page. I'm kind of astonished about how much our posts go out there. I think I made a post a few days ago. You know, we have 1.9 thousand likes, and our 1 month we reached 43,000. I think this week alone we're already at 14,000, you know, reaching people. And so thank everybody for their activity at that, and hope everybody has a fantastic week.
Download our episodes. We're on Spreaker. How many other? We're on several different of the podcasts, so go find us and download us.
Yeah, there's because we joined a network. We're on a lot more platforms now, and the show just keeps growing and growing and growing. And I think this was something like episode 238, something like that.
Yeah.
Like 5 solid years of Paranormal Horizons. So we want to thank all the listeners out there. And what's that?
Wonderful.
Anyway, hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week. We'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. for another episode, and everybody just stay positive and laugh a little. We need to keep those vibrations up. Good night, everyone.
Good night.